Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health, nutrition, and life in general in today's modern world. As always, I'm joined by my good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Hello again to both of you.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So, I have a question for the pair of you. Tomorrow is Hollywood's big event of the year, the Oscars. You both have backgrounds in the business. Any thoughts on who's going to be cleaning up on the awards?
Well, I think the obvious winners are The King's Speech, and the only one who can really rival it's Notebook, but I belong to a group who wasn't crazy about each one. I actually boycotted The King's Speech and didn't watch it because of my feelings, and you as a Brit might share some of them. Basically, George VI was not competent to be the King of England, and he looked around at a dangerous sight, climate where basically Clement Chamberlain had ceded all British rights, as we all understand in Europe, to the Nazis, a peace in our time. And he looked around, he just wasn't up to it. And somehow or another, this movie makes him look a lot better than he really was. And it bothers me, because he was really a wimp who advocated his throne because he wasn't competent to be the King of England.
Yeah, but the brother is the one who became the King of England.
I know, but he became the King of England because...
his brother was a wimp.
Yeah, right.
Right. Not this sex fiend guy.
And you know, at another time in English history, as I'm sure you'll agree... someone would have just killed him, because that's how you would have eliminated a weak successor to the crown, right?
Absolutely. It's just a variation on Darwin's theory about natural selection.
Oh, yes. Darwin didn't factor into some of the times that selection didn't always happen naturally. And, you know, I think right now emperors, and I think Gaddafi is a great example, eliminate that problem of having your children desiring your throne so much they'll kill you by sending them to America and feeding them American women and parties. And I mean, you see the thing on the news where Beyonce did the private show for them in Bimini? I understood she was paid more than $1 million, so... you know, why would anyone want to overthrow their father when their father is giving them these kind of perks every day?
I agree. And actually,
in fact, you'd want to keep him as the king, right?
Right.
Right.
All the benefits, no work.
That's right. Good to be the king.
Going back to the Oscars, I have to confess that I'm really not much of a moviegoer. But I was thinking about it this morning. The last time I was in a theater was about 5 years ago. 10 a.m. on a Tuesday morning to watch a press screening of an absolutely dreadful vampire flick. The entire audience consisted of Jen and I and... two guys from a couple of the local TV stations, the theater manager, who was also playing the role of projectionist. There was no popcorn, there was no press kit, and the sound system, you could have woken the living dead with it.
That's good.
But
you know, most that's the problem. Most critics in Los Angeles see movies under the exact same circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an absolutely awful experience. And after we left, I said to Jen, free movies.
I've said that myself a few times. But, you know, frequently, Ashton, I have a friend who was a Hollywood publicist who's retired now, who would invite us to those, and we would go to studio screening rooms, which are actually very, very nice, and we would see movies. And generally, we would see them with only critics. So it would be six or seven critics sitting there watching a movie, a pre-release movie, and sometimes it was not unlike the book business. They would schedule the screenings to try to convince these particular critics to review a movie, because critics don't review every movie. So it was somewhat a little political thing going on. So anyway, coming back to it, the movies were okay, but I gotta tell you, the conversation afterwards was really interesting. The first impression of critics who had no warning of what they were about to see, and those conversations could easily go from rage to, you know, God knows what, but they were fascinating.
Oh, indeed. But yeah, I got to admit, sitting in an empty theater or a crowded theater just doesn't really wind my crank, as the saying goes.
I will tell a story that will make all those people dying to be in Hollywood not always dying to be in Hollywood. Ashley and I obviously have friends who are actors. Some are well-known, and the names are going to be withheld to protect the guilty. So Ashley didn't want to be in this play. I don't even think there was a one-man play, and there wasn't room for her anyway. And the director, who's a well-known actor,
I was assistant director.
Asked her to serve as assistant director and to work on the play, which seemed like a lot of fun to her at the time. So she said, okay. Well, it turned out to be the rehearsals from hell, and it never got much better. So now the play comes up, and believe me, Ashley's coming home every day going, I don't know why I'm doing this, blah, 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 blah.
But it's a credit. It's a credit.
You know, and it's, you know, for the love of the game, so to speak.
Yeah.
So now here we are, and time is ticking by, and the show's coming up, and the premiere's coming up, and it's on Melrose, which is a, you know, pretty well-known theater area of Los Angeles. So we've got this really nice theater and nice thing going. So naturally, guess who has to go? Me. So here, after hearing horror story after horror story for a few months, I now have to go see the horror.
And the director's a really well-known guy.
Yeah,
really well-known.
Yeah. So anyway, make a long story short, I devise a Manny plan. Oh, I'll just hang around everything, wait till it begins, shake a bunch of hands, smile an awful lot, and when the play's ready to go, I'll sneak in the men's room, I'll sneak out, and I'll go over to Johnny Rockets and have a burger and ignore the damn play, because I already know what it's about. And believe me, I said to Ashley, if I have to watch this, I'm going to pull my hair out one by one. So now I go hide in the men's room, and I'm going, ah, this is a piece of cake. And I hear the director walking by going, where's Manny? We can't start without Manny. We're holding the play up. Now I'm going, oh, no, he's not going to start the play.
L.A. Time, critics are waiting. The place is packed.
And I'm in the bathroom. Now I'm starting to sweat. I got to go to this. I got to watch this thing. So finally I give it up, you know, and I go, okay. So I come out and he goes, oh, here you are. We're ready to go now. So he saved me a seat. Guess where it was? Front row center. So now I got to sit through a play, which, by the way, had no intermission because he wanted everybody to suffer like the guy and feel what the actor was feeling that was doing the show. Well, you know, that's like watching a Holocaust movie and putting you into a place to be gassed so you know exactly how a Holocaust victim felt.
In fact, it was dragged out to make sure that everybody felt it. I think they increased the play by 30 minutes
yeah.
is what we ended up doing. Not we, he.
So now the story gets worse. I mean, now in the front row center, can't go anywhere. One act play, he hauls out a toilet, an old toilet, sets down and sits on the toilet to do the play, and it's about a homeless guy coping, and he looks around the audience, he looks at me, and I could read his mind. Oh, that's Ashley's husband. I mean, I could almost hear the words coming out of his mouth. I'm going, oh, no. So what does he do? He starts doing the play, talking to me, which, by the way, is a common thing. You know, I once gave Michael Caine some advice before he was speaking to the Screen Actors Guild that he said, well, I'm not used to doing this. And I said to him, well, you know, pick out your – I was sitting with his PR agent, the same friend of ours, And I said, well, just either talk to him or me or someone else until you feel totally comfortable. Then you can look at the audience and do your thing. And he accepted advice, and he did, and it worked really well. So a lot of actors do that.
Which, of course, wait a minute. If you're going to talk about that, Manny starts coughing in that particular
Don't even go to that
event
story.
And has to leave while Monica Kane is like picked Manny to focus his speech to.
Yeah,
so that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I was recovering from the flu and I started. So you ever see the original Jack Benny updated by Mel Brooks? Movie. It's a remake of the. Can't think of the name of the movie in the 40s where they're playing actors in Germany, and what's his name keeps getting out of the office and walking back because he's having an affair with the female lead played by Anne Bancroft. You ever see that movie? It was like that. In the middle of him talking to me in front of this huge audience, maybe 1,200 people in his theater, I get up from the front row center, 5 feet in front of him, walk out because I'm having a coughing spell.
And then Manny can't see the look on Michael Caine's face because he thought he said something to upset Manny. But getting back to the play, you know, it's about this homeless guy with dragged out an upside-down toilet, and he originally wrote this play, and the actor was not homeless, but this was the play he was doing, and the play that he wrote, and he had found a freeze-dried dog in a trunk somewhere in somebody's attic when he was going to rent a room, and so he decided to create this entire play around this upside-down toilet and this freeze-dried dog. Now, Manny is stuck in the front row. And I want you to know, Simon, that critic never forgot me. No matter where I went in L.A., I would run into this critic from the L.A. Times, and he'd go, "How are you?" And he'd start talking about that play.
It was literally the longest 2.5 hours of my life. I really didn't think I was going to survive it.
It was a great learning lesson. It really was. It was good.
It was
okay. Oh, okay. Earlier this week, the pair of you introduced me to a term that I had never heard before, the EnviroPig. And I think our listeners deserve to hear about what an EnviroPig might be.
Well, first of all, what we should do is define an EnviroPig. It's a trademark for a genetically modified line of Yorkshire pigs. They were first created in 1999, and they have the capability to digest plant phosphorus more efficiently than ordinary unmodified pigs. The industry considers them greener. They emit a smaller quantity of pollutants in their manure. And that's why they named them EnviroPig. Thought it was a great marketing name. And, of course, you know, we know the creators one day hope they'll be sold in markets and, you know, all over the world, and you'll be having EnviroPig rigs, your ribs. You can imagine baby backs from that. It's the pig itself is marked as the first transgenic animal created to solve an environmental problem. I wonder what marketing agent came up with that title. But, you know, it's got its critics, and we are, of course, among them. And the scale of livestock right now, farming in our country, really needs to be dealt with, and we need to talk about it, because if we're now genetically modifying pigs to adapt to food, there's something wrong with that choice. We should be changing food to adapt to animals. It'd be almost like saying, you know, hey, you can't eat rose bushes and you can't eat stones, so we're going to genetically modify you so you can eat stones and you know, roses and other food. And I think that's sort of backwards. And you know, it's so bad that a lot of scientists basically say that the EnviroPig is a Franken-pig in disguise. And I don't think there's any question there. I mean, anytime you start altering genes to just basically change the phosphorus levels, it's incredible.
And the big problem is the fact that the phosphorus is derived from the GMO BT feed, and it's completely indigestible to pigs without an enzyme called phytase. So this EnviroPig was created to produce this enzyme phytase in the salivary glands that's secreted in the saliva. So currently, farmers feed their pigs a phytase enzyme as a supplement, but the EnviroPig claim, what creators claim, the phytase supplement aren't as effective in breaking down this phosphorus as the phytase created in man-made EnviroPig.
Let me interject something. We pointed out in our books, and every time we talk about this, that every time they feed any of these things to cattle, pigs, or anything else, they don't give them natural phosphorus. They create a synthetic. They don't give them natural growth hormones. They created a genetically modified one created in the lab by Monsanto. They don't give them natural feed, what pigs and cows normally eat. They give them genetically modified BT corn. So whatever problems that we have in feeding animals starts with that. So here we have another problem with feeding animals BT GMO corn. And the problem is that they generate too much phosphorus in their manure. And by the way, ASHI found tests that show that people eat too much fast food have too high of phosphorus levels in their food. Gee, cattle eat and pigs eat GMO corn, too much phosphorus. Phosphorus. Americans eat too much genetically modified food, too much phosphorus. You think there's a tie there, Ashley?
Oh, absolutely there's a tie. And to go out of your way to make a pig, I mean, let's just make it like we're manufacturing toys. You know, and it's really funny, Simon, when Manny and I first started writing these books, I was hard to sway because I'm very biotech, very medicine, very, you know, because of my nursing background, it's all about, you know, taking a pill. Let's create a pill, that'll fix it. Let's create something within an animal, that'll fix it. But what is not said is what the alterations are doing, how they do the alteration, what's the recipe for it, and then what's the end result of how it impacts human beings. So I have completely been swayed from the biotech industry now that I fully understand what they're doing in the labs. It's sick.
Well, let's stay with some, and I agree, and we're going to come back to that, but
can I just ask a real quick question here? The brand of pig is a Yorkshire pig, mm-hmm. but it's not a Euro Enviro pig, I don't think. Where is this research taking place?
At a university in Canada, which was the place that was started. The applications to use the pig are right now presently pending in Canada and the U.S. The belief is the U.S. is closer to approving this than the Canadian government is, but then again, an issue we'll get to is we believe, and most other experts believe, that they're going to try and deal with and approve the Franken salmon before they approve the Franken pig. So it's more of a local problem. You have to remember, these genetically modified animals and cloned animals are not popular in Europe. There are genetically modified sheep, Daisy, and the rest of them in England, but they're not really designed for the food chain. They're still playing genetically there, where here everything is being rushed to the food chain. But they have 8 generations have experimented with, but there's been no independent experimentation, and which gets us back to where I was, because these two relate. Once again, why do they feed GMO BT grains, like basically soy, because soy is included as well as corn? It's because their grains are cheap. But why are they cheap? They're cheap because the government subsidizes the growing of genetically modified corn. In fact, I don't even know if you know this, Simon, but if a farmer agrees to plant 2/3 of his crops as genetically modified crops, the government gives them a huge loan out of the crop insurance fund that is frankly a gift from the government.
Which are taxes.
Right.
So we're paying to make our animals sick, to make our land sick, and to make us sick.
No, we're paying to subsidize Monsanto's desire to sell genetically modified crops to every farmer in the U.S. and compel them to grow genetically modified crops. And how do you do it? You bribe them with free money and loans. It's the oldest trick in America, isn't it, Simon?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, we'll get that carrot, you know, the old story, carrot and stick, well, that was the 3,000-year-old axiom. It's more like a $100 bill on a stick is what it's becoming in our country, because this is about money. But that's the point. The point is, I believe as of today, they spent between $5 to $10 billion on this EnviroPig.
So Simon, I'm going to give you the recipe so you can see how you can make it a laugh. Okay.
Let me finish the comment.
I can make my own Enviro pig.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, we're going to get to that one part, too, because guess what? When the patents are done, we can all make our Enviro pig.
Right. They even show you on the Internet.
Right.
But that's okay, Manny. Go ahead.
As I said, you know, my joke, and for those of us listening to the show, Simon published a blog yesterday on this, so whatever you miss out of our conversation, you can read on Blogger News. And as I said to him, this is where we get to Dr. Frankenstein. The minute it becomes the patents are done, some doctor in some wooded area like Transylvania or, you know, North Carolina or some other place, or Ohio, which is the worst of all, is going to sit down and create their own pig. So pretty soon we're going to have people with pigs. And as I said to Ashley, we may have to consider voting for a Minotaur for president, because as Ashley's about to tell you, when you mix the formula and see how they make this pig, it's upsetting. And when you see how they're experimenting with genes, if this doesn't feel like you're watching a bad sci-fi movie or reading Dr. Frankenstein, I'm shocked. So, Ashley, tell us, how they make the pig?
Okay, hold on 1 second. My wife is about to go shopping.
This is important.
You want a really good-looking
Enviro pig.
Yeah. No, cancel the piglets. You know, we're not gonna breed them this week. Okay. All right. I'm sorry about that.
So what did you do? Cancel your order on a petri dish?
Right.
Can you imagine now when the vision? If I were doing cartoons, I'd do a cartoon of a guy yelling to his wife, "Honey, are you working on the spare ribs?" And they'd show her in the kitchen stirring a petri dish, going, "Yeah, I'm working on them right now."
They deserve to be mocked. They really do. I'm sad because I believe so much in biotech, and here I am going, "What are they doing?" Okay, let's make a recipe for making an EnviroPig. First, you take a genome or a gene of an E. coli bacterium. That means, you know, E. coli, the bad bacteria that comes out of your intestine, poo. Okay, so let's take some cells from poo. Now we're going to clean out that poo. That's a DNA from an E. coli bacterium.
Well, honey, wait.
And we're going to mix that in with what?
Don't you get E. coli at a Taco Bell or one of those fast food?
Yeah, I guess you can pull it off your burger.
Or
they didn't put enough ammonia
in
it. Okay, so anyway, the scientists then combine a DNA from the E. coli bacterium with a mouse. And the mouse DNA is used, they took more than 20,000 cloned cells from the DNA of a mouse to make sure that modification would work in mammals of the Yorkshire pig. And they put it into the embryo to create an EnviroPig, which means the DNA of everything you eat of that pig is going to contain E. coli and mouse cells.
Honey, we have two cats. Does that mean I have to fight the cats for spare ribs in the future?
Yeah, may very well be. Doesn't sound very appetizing to me. Does it sound appetizing to you, Simon?
No, I mean, absolutely not.
Most people know how dangerous E. coli is, right?
I have a new slogan. Do you know where your pig has been?
I mean, there's a great TV program on the Food Channel, I think it is. This guy roams around the world eating things that, you know, few would dare to put in their mouth.
Yeah. By the way, that's an actor out of work, obviously.
Oh.
But I mean, I for one, I'm not really a big mouse fan. There's not much meat on them. Yeah.
Wait.
Don't they eat mouse rarebit in England? Because, you know, small rabbits don't have an awful lot of, you know, meat either. But, no, what bothers me is, you know, you have to kill about 3,000 rats to make a coat. That's the problem.
Well, they know how to clone them now. Of course, cloning is banned, but I don't understand how cloning is okay to do with... They're doing cloning with everything, but including mice. So, I mean, they have to clone the DNA cells in order to combine it, and that's what they're doing right now. Oh, and part of that recipe, now this is an important ingredient in that recipe, I almost forgot to tell you. You have to have a promoter gene to split it. And in this case, you're using a marine parotid secretory protein gene. Now, what that means is it causes sexual dimorphism, which alters or eliminates the systemic differences in form between individuals of different sex in the same species.
Oh, RuPaul?
Yeah. So what's really confusing to me is the fact that they know fragments of transgenetic, there's DNA transfer that occurs with genes. DNA transfer can occur within humans. So we're going to be putting this thing, and we're going to be allowing moms who have babies growing eat the stuff. And, I mean, I just can't even go there, Manny. I'm like, all because the 1% of the phosphorus is disrupted within the pig.
You know, Simon, I have visions of Stacy Keach in a Cheech and Chong movie growing a tail in the back of that van smoking really wild weed. Did you ever see that movie? Well, that's what could happen to Americans, you know. A few mouse burgers, and the next thing you know, you got a new tail.
Now, one
thing that I'm curious about, and I know our listeners are, is you've mentioned phosphor a couple of times. Mm-hmm. What is the significance of phosphor? Why should anyone care?
Phosphorus is one of the main elements in human beings, and there's a list of elements within people, and its main purpose is that it's a macro mineral, which is most abundant mineral in the body, and it normally makes up only 1% of the totality of the body weight, so it's a very small percent, but its main function is that it's in every cell in the body. And approximately 85% is bound with calcium to form the bones, the teeth, and calcium phosphate is a major mineral component of bones. So phosphorus is very, very biochemically important within the body, and it's important for the homeostasis within the body, which is the balance of your pH, your acid-base balance. So it's one of the elements within the body that you have to have. But... And it's rare that it's ever thrown off or you ever have too much of it. But in pigs, they have way too much, and it's being excreted into the soil.
Well, honey, that's not entirely true. It's an impact problem for women over 60 years of age. Their diets need to contain phosphorus because this is one of the things that leads to osteoporosis.
Correct.
So if you take a lot of calcium because of your concerns of osteoporosis, you need to also take a phosphorus supplement to bind that calcium in your body.
Also, if there's too much, if you're taking too many antacids, there's a problem with that as well. And if somebody has a problem with kidney dysfunction, it has a problem with the phosphorus level also.
Yeah, because, you know, Simon, I don't know if you know this, but phosphorus is also used to synthesize protein. So if you eat a lot of meat, then you need phosphorus to help break down the protein and the fats and the carbohydrates. So people who are low in phosphorus tend to have higher carbohydrate levels. So this is one of those minerals and little things that run in your body that people don't think about that is almost like adding a little bit of pepper to food and going, oh, my God, it tastes better. Well, you add a little phosphorus to a human being, and their bones are stronger, their teeth are stronger, and they function far better. So, and it's funny because I'm going to ask this rhetorical question that Ash and I asked ourselves. I've never been really tested for phosphorus that I can recall.
It's part of the chemical element, yes, because in the body has a total of about 12 elements in it. And the ones most commonly that we talk about are oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, calcium, phosphorus, again, 1%, potassium, sulfur, sodium, magnesium, copper. You have these main elements within your body that are important for every cell to maintain its balance. And it's very important for the organic molecules in the body to maintain these. Are you looking at it to see if phosphorus should have been checked? So, and one of the benefits of the function also that's important and a key talk about this EnviroPig is phosphorus is needed for metabolism of the carbohydrates and fats to produce energy. Now, if your body starts and it also is required for the synthesis of protein for growth and repair of cells and tissue, including the main part of the DNA and RNA. Now, if you're feeding an EnviroPig something that's going to alter its gene, then you're feeding that genetic, which can transfer, genes can transfer, and you're now going to feed that to people. They better test the heck out of this up and down the park for the next 200 years before they give it to people.
Okay, I'm going to add something to that. You're right, Ashley. I have been tested for
phosphorus. That's right. It's a
phosphorus.
Very important element.
But it doesn't say that. What I did while Ashley was talking is I went to my scan program and I pulled up some of my medical reports. Most Americans don't ask their doctors for their laboratory reports. They go, is it okay? Yeah, you're okay. And they're done. My doctor gives me a copy. I scan them, keep them on my computer so I can look at them, and I compare one to the previous one, which is a wonderful idea. It's part of our discussions on our books about keeping your medical records and being able to do this. So I looked up under the chemistry section. It says ALK phosphatase. Now, I know that's a measurement of the enzyme that it creates. Well, the scale is 34 to 119. I don't know which units, whether that's milligrams or whatever exactly. And I apparently have a very low one, which I didn't know until this very second. It's 37, a low is 34, and a high is 119. So I may have discovered that perhaps I should take some type of supplement. And when I look at it and I look at the other levels of various things, it makes me wonder how it affects other chemicals in my body. So,
well,
wait a minute, Ashley. I'm going to get some phosphorus, and I'm going to take some phosphorus supplements, and the next time I have a blood test, which will be pretty soon, I'll report back to everybody whether it made a difference and how it affected my blood test. So I am now field rat mouse experiment number 101 for everybody. Normally I limit my experimentation to burgers, but I'm going to throw myself on my sword for some phosphorus this month.
Well, I wanted to Simon, repeat something that I think is vital because of the obesity issue in our country. Phosphorus, again, is involved in the metabolism of fat, carbohydrates, and protein, and in the effective utilization of many of B-group vitamins and energy. So if you're going to mess with that phosphorus within your body, you're messing with your bones, your tissue, your cells, your metabolism, the carbohydrates, the protein. You can throw all of that out of balance, but it's true with any of the elements in your body. It's the constant wanting to keep everything in balance. Now, the deficiency symptoms usually occur with people who are anorexic or near starvation, and that's when they find it, or other people at risk with the phosphorus deficiency is alcoholics and diabetics. Diets high in fructose, especially if it is low in magnesium, increase loss of phosphorus in the urine and will deplete the body as well. So this is the way a person could have deficiency. So what's happening right now with the pig is they're feeding all these high carbohydrates to the pig of materials they cannot break down. Now, recently, or not too recently, a couple years back, I guess it is recently, they found that pigs, they traced the pigs back 8,000 years. Now, these pigs for 8,000 years have been foraging around the land, not needing supplements, not creating a too much phosphate in the soil, which leads to acid rain and other problems, and depleting the soil of all the nutrients, which then depletes people of the nutrients they need. And I think that 8,000 years is a long time for pigs to survive, and suddenly in the last 20 years, we have such a problem that the biotech industry said, that first lie of giving it corn so we can take care of all the excess we have that's ours, we patented, we own, Wolf just fixed it by keep changing the animal. Well, change its DNA and gene, and oh well, if it has a little impact on some people, takes care of our problem.
Well, but the bigger issue comes back to why spend somewhere between $5 to $10 billion to create a pig that can eat genetically modified corn when all we have to do is go back to growing organically grown corn and to allow pigs to eat in a pasture instead of being locked up in a room with all of these basic problems with factory farming. And let me give you some stats about that. There are 1.5 billion pigs in the world as of 2009, producing 21 billion pounds of fecal matter a year, okay? That's a lot. Over the last 20 years, so many pigs have escaped these factory farms and other farms that they expect there's another 2 million to 6 million in wild pigs. There is such a problem across the country, they say they can't even eradicate them. So to give you some feeling, there are 460 million pigs in China alone and 65 million pigs in the U.S., okay? That's a lot, of which we kill 15 to 16 million pigs a year for food. So, you know, basically this is a huge amount. I mean, 46 pigs or 5.5 cows or 800 chickens produce enough waste a day to provide the equivalent of 1 gallon of gasoline if we took their fecal waste and converted it. And in some instances, why is this a problem? Because there's 38,000 pigs combined in only 15 containment barns, over 2,000 per barn or area in Carroll County, Iowa. That's a huge amount. And as she went back to the pigs, the problem with this is we all discussed is they put these pigs, in gestational crates. So in the 1990s, when pigs roamed free, a sow would produce about 10 piglets a year. Now these sows, locked up in cages, fed growth hormones and everything else, produce 12 to 13 pigs per litter, but they do it 2.5 times a year. So the same pig is producing 30 piglets a year instead of 10. I mean, that's one worn-out mama at the end of the day. So as you look at these numbers, it's just a huge amount of numbers involved. So the pigs are taking half the time to grow. Why? Because the real reason is when you feed them genetically modified corn, growth hormones, and antibiotics, they come to full size in 140 to 170 days, and now they're sending them to market at 270 pounds, where the number years ago was closer to 200. So in a half the time, they can make a pig 30% larger to sell. But to do it, they have to create all this genetically modified corn and then find a solution to the phosphorus and other problems and waste that it creates around the world.
Now, normal manure waste, getting back to the actual way animals should be fed, because they've traced back for thousands of years. Cattle have roamed, pigs have roamed, chickens have roamed, and with it, they didn't have this manure problem because they had sustainable agriculture where they ate, and they ate the normal foods that were good for them, and then they laid out the manure that then allowed that ground to reproduce because the soil would be turned over and reproduced with other vegetables and growing, and then that soil was good. I mean, you could use that soil, but right now they're spraying it with the lagoons of poo.
So, Simon, in looking at this, were you surprised to see that cattle and pigs were fed with just corn and that corn wasn't their natural diet?
Surprised wasn't the word. I was absolutely shocked. And we've talked about this before. I mean, what's going on is a race to the kill. Can we kill the cattle by our machinery before we kill the cattle by what we're feeding it?
Yeah, can you explain how you view that? Because rather than give a technical explanation, what was your practical feeling you know, when you read all of that and you looked at the problem. Because if I recall, you looked at all these sites for factory farming and how they were treating the pigs and put a lot of time into looking into this feed. And I wondered what your conclusions were as an average person who just jumped into the fray a short time ago.
Okay. It's really simple. I go to the supermarket and I look at my, pork chops or my, beef roast, and I go, oh my, I wonder what I'm really eating, because it certainly isn't the meat that I recall growing up eating, because it can't be. You know, how can a cattle fed on grain be the same as cattle fed on, you know, grass as they roam around? And part of that roaming actually does, you know, give them the muscle, which is so much a part of the taste. If you've got a bunch of cattle in a very, very confined area, how on earth can their muscles develop to their normal standards? And then you throw in the idea of, well, let's genetically modify the whole thing. You go, whoa, Houston, we have a problem.
It's a serious problem.
No, I agree. Well, you know, Simon, more interesting than that is the problem expands in different ways. There's 1.3 billion cattle in the world. They produce 18 billion pounds of fecal matter. Pigs around the world are another 21 billion pounds of fecal matter. There's 50 billion chickens producing 15 billion pounds of fecal matter. And there are 6.8 million humans producing probably 7 billion pounds, some more than others, but it's a lot. So, you know, look at this number. What are we looking at here? 60, 70 billion pounds of poo created a day in this world? I mean, eliminating that from our world is a huge problem. And we've talked about manure lagoons. And one of the problems in these confined, you know, cattle ranches and pig ranches is this huge production of fecal matter that they can't do anything with, that they put in these lagoons or they store in tanks underneath. So what we have is growing. We're accumulating really poo quicker than any other thing in the whole world, and what to do about it. And I'm sure that must concern you, too. I mean, basically, we were all talking about, and one of you should tell the story about what they're doing with poo in the winter in these states.
Oh, let's get on to that.
Right, well, how do you feel about that, Simon? Did you see what they're doing with poo in Iowa in the winter?
Yeah. I am horrified, and I'm horrified for many reasons. Here's the scoop, folks. It's winter. There's snow on the ground. It is frosty cold. The ground is frozen. So we've got this, you know, huge amount of poo. Fecal matter, if you will, but it's more of a slurry than something solid. The swimming pools of poo are getting full. Well, let's just get rid of it. We'll spray it on the snow. I mean, great idea. Unfortunately, there are a couple of problems. Number one, I'm pretty darn certain it, causes some health problems for people in the area. Now, the other issue, what about environmental problems? The poo has nowhere to go because it's frozen. But come the spring thaw, it's got to go somewhere. And it's going to be part of the runoff. So, we kill a few fish. Who cares? We taint the drinking water and groundwater. Who cares? At least our poo lagoon didn't overflow.
The dead zones. Remember the fish dead zones, which you experience in the south and in the Caribbean, right? Those huge zones where no fish grow, where all this fecal matter comes to waste in the ocean.
Right.
You
can get online, and if you Google, fishing dead zones or fish dead zones, there's world maps. And it's not hard to figure out why those particular areas are dead zones. And it's all because of poo.
And so they're going to genetically modify the fish and the pigs so that when they genetically modify it, they can stop the dead zone rather than feed them the proper feed. Part of the problem with the dead zone, I think, is with the dead zone with the fish is because they're feeding them soy and products that the fish also can't digest. So we're feeding our animals to accommodate the first lie, which is overproduction of too much corn and soy. And in order to handle all of this, let's just feed it to the animals and then to heck with the rest of us.
Well, no, honey, actually they're feeding fish the same GMO BT corn they're feeding the cattle and the pigs.
And they're giving them soy.
Who knows? One day we'll all be just eating BT corn, and there won't be any other food in the world. And for those people out there go, oh, we have problems feeding the world, you need to understand something very simple. Right now there are 105 million cattle approximately in the United States. In the late 19th century, somewhere in the 1850s to 1870s, the bison population in this country before it started moving towards extinction was between 60 and 100 million. Most people place it closer to 100 million head of buffalo. So we fed in the 1850s 100 million head of buffalo on the range without any problem at all. In fact, without having to grow any feed, buy Monsanto sterile seeds, or deal with phosphorus issues, which is almost the same amount of cattle as we have now, without having to worry about it. So this is strictly a marketing issue completely. And we provide in our books a whole bunch of tests. Ashley brought one up the other day that had 400 scientists around the world joined in the study that basically said industrial farming, factory farming, will not solve the world's hunger needs. So don't listen to the industry who say, oh, God, we have all these starving people abroad who need this. The fact is they don't want genetically modified food, won't buy it, and we're harming our foreign trade by making something that nobody wants and is being force-fed to human beings, cattle, and pigs.
And that particular World Watch of Independent Researchers in that organization, which is independent scientists of 400 scientists, 60 countries, are saying that the sustainable farming techniques will build healthy soil, which will benefit the planet's health, will benefit health, and there's plenty of food for everybody. So the fact that this is propaganda, and I bought into it, I thought, hey, this is the only way we can solve, world hunger. What a bunch of malarkey. It really is. It's a bunch of malarkey.
And to add to it before, Simon, I want to add one quick thought. On the balance of trade issue that I was talking about, experts estimate it would reduce Americans' balance of trade deficit by $80 billion a year. It's a major factor in the economic problems of the United States.
Why is that?
Because Europe, Japan, and other countries will not accept our genetically modified corn, soy, etc.
And soon to be alfalfa, if that goes
right
through. That's horrible.
And they also won't accept the genetically modified meat. So at the end of the day, this is a whole area of the American economy that can no longer be exported. So
farmers say they've been put out of business because
mm-hmm.
of it.
So when they talk about American products are not being brought purchased abroad and that we're not being competitive. It's not a labor issue. It's a deception issue. What they aren't saying to the American public is we can't export many of our goods because they're substandard and nobody wants them. Could you imagine trying to export a Pinto car, for example? Well, imagine that these cattle and other things are being viewed like the dangerous Pinto was. So people around the world don't want American products. And it's not anti-American. It's not because of tariffs. It's because it's garbage.
And getting back to your poo for a second, Simon, when you were talking about the spray on the poo, that's also part of why they're not accepting our food. They can't even take our conventional farming goods because of the fact that we're spraying our fields with manure lagoons filled with GMO, phosphorus is off the charts from the pigs because we're feeding them the wrong food, cattle that have acidosis and are sick, filled with antibiotics, filled with hormones, which we didn't even get into. That's going into our water supply, as you said, Simon, as a runoff. And that's they can't accept any of it. And they're spraying it on the conventional food that is becoming your fruits and vegetables.
You know, so a friend of mine said, oh, my God, if I get a glass of tap water, sit down to my genetically modified hamburger with ammonia in it from McDonald's or one of these pay pills, so what am I eating? And I'm saying to you, it's not what you're eating. What you're doing is shortening your life and exposing yourself to illness and disease. And I imagine, Simon, and tell me if you feel differently, when you go into the market and you look at this, besides asking yourself, what am I eating, are you asking yourself, what is it going to do to me?
Oh, indeed. I mean, there is no doubt in my mind that that there's a cumulative effect. One steak, one pork chop, not going to make a difference in your life. But, you know, if this is part of your staple diet, day in, day out, that there has to be a cumulative effect.
Yeah. Do you remember the quote from, I think it's from Sanjay Gupta, who's with CNN? Excuse me, that we're all corn chips walking? Well, basically, when you look at that steak, you're talking about a corn chip steak. And oddly enough, I recall sending you some articles and material out of our books that talks about how when you feed these cattle and pigs all of this BT corn and soy, what happens is their fat is no longer animal fat, beef lard. It becomes the same as vegetable oil. So, you know, I almost want to apologize to McDonald's who substitutes their beef lard to cook fries. Maybe they realize that all their beef lard is really the same, you know, vegetable oil as you get from plants because you are what you eat. If you are what you eat, all that fat in cows and pigs is really just corn and vegetable oil.
I want to go back to the Enviro pig just for a second. One of the selling points is that it's a greener pig.
I personally do not paint my pigs green.
Right, neither do I. All right, it produces less excrement.
No, it's got the same excrement but less phosphorus in it.
Which means it may still have diarrhea because it's still eating the wrong food, but hey, what the heck? It's got less phosphorus in it.
I think what happened is when on nights where the moon doesn't come out or a week of no moon a month, that these confined factory farms were glowing in the dark. That you could see the manure lagoons because of the glow. In fact, I've suggested that what we should do in the market is to confirm our beef doesn't have too much phosphorus in it, to shut all the lights on, see if it glows. You know, like your watch does in the middle of the night?
You pick out my steak by the glow.
Oh, I want that one.
It's got a little less glow on it.
Hey, I got a new product, Moon Glow Beef.
I'm pretty certain that's a number 31 at my local Chinese restaurant.
And as we both know, Simon, is that when we talked about acid rain, the impact of this or a manure particulates getting up and, you know, and it creates an acid rain, the phosphorus in those lagoons, when it does the runoff, and they've got all this runoff happening, choke off the oxygen that does that fish kill. So things that are healthy for us, of the fish that we're supposed to be eating, we can't eat because they die. They will die in that water, and they have had massive fish kill because of the improper cleanup of these lagoons.
Simon, did you read the statistics in our books on the pollution of the waterways from Maryland to Chesapeake Bay all across Texas by this? Did you remember reading that?
Yes.
Was that surprising to you also?
Actually, not altogether. And I've got my acid rain hat on at the moment.
Well, tell us what your experiences are then.
Well, here's the real problem. Acid rain tends to happen somewhere other than where the problem starts. And it's due to the wind. You know, particulates go up in the air. The wind blows them, and acid rain falls somewhere else. You know, there was several studies done about pollution coming from the old USSR, industrial pollution in this particular instance.
And Chernobyl.
Right.
You know, the effects of Chernobyl were felt as far as Seattle.
Right. And a lot of this acid rain actually hit the grain-growing areas of Canada, Saskatchewan, you know, the flatlands, as I like to call them.
Very flatlands.
Right. And I mean, there was no pollution in Saskatchewan. You know, where'd it come from? Oh, well, it's coming from Russia. Yeah, so, I mean, acid rain isn't necessarily something that is going to happen wherever you're causing the problem. In fact, likely not. I think the one exception to that may well be the Gulf region and acid rain caused by the disaster that BP created. But mostly it's hundreds, even thousands of miles away from the source.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to throw some quick facts so people understand that it's not just the water. When you talk about acid rain, animal protein production, which is, you know, basically cows, require 8 times as much fossil fuel energy than producing a plant. So watering a plant, in terms of its footprint in the ecology, is so much less than a beef. And at the same time, the plant emits, you know, basically oxygen, and it turns into photosynthesis creates nitrogen and all these other things and oxygen that are good for the society. And the amazing thing is, despite this disparity, beef is only 1.4 times more nutritious when you compare vitamins, minerals, plant protein than plants are. So you take a look at a cow. Cows produce between 25 to 50 gallons of methane a day. Methane contributes about 20% of the greenhouse effect. So some of this acid rain you and Ash are talking about is the methane gas from these factory farms that go up basically into the atmosphere, because methane is among the most potent greenhouse gases. And scientists say that controlling these emissions from cows and sheep, as well as oil and gas, is a major step in limiting climate change. It's also a major component of natural gas and 23 times more potent in trapping heat in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. So in other words, the methane gas from these particular farms are creating part of the heat increase, and it takes 12 years before methane gas is oxidized and converted into carbon dioxide. I mean, it's just a huge problem. So by expanding these factory farms and doing all this, we're expanding acid rain. So, Ashley, you had a comment about that.
Well, I was going to say, keeping in mind just in Iowa, Iowa alone has 5,500 CAFOs that we could find recorded. And you think of 5,500 CAFOs with all these hidden animals and all these hidden lagoons that we don't get to see because they're so proud of them, they have no windows, and they're underground so that they can be hidden, that this amount is being sprayed into the ground and then going up to the air with all of the ammonia and the disgusting particulates. It can go, it's not just an Iowa problem, and it's in every state that has these CAFOs, and it's like you're saying, Simon, this is blowing off into the rain, into the snow, and it can kill forest, which means it'll impact your own home. It can affect plants, and there's a huge, massive problem because it affects the pH within the soil, within the atmosphere, and we live in pH.
Yeah, and to give you some idea, the actual amount, according to the EPA, is 12 million tons of methane per year are put in the atmosphere by cattle. That's 20% of the U.S. methane emissions. So these factory farms are putting up, well, assume right now they're 80 to 90% of what of cattle that are grown. They're putting up 16 to 17% of the methane emissions that create acid rain.
And the other 80% comes from Taco Bell and McDonald's.
Well, I'll give you an example. It's 54 times what chickens put out, 50 times what even, what do you call it, sheep put out. Turkey, turkey is dramatically less, as is other things. So what you're looking at are huge amounts of cattle-dominated methane. So, to give you a comparison, you look at the water consumption because that's the basis sometimes of what stimulates the production of waste, fecal matter, urine, et cetera. Well, when you raise chickens, it takes about 1,600 quarts of water to make 1 pound of meat, okay? Soybeans take less than 900 quarts, okay? Things like wheat, 900. Potato, 500. So when you look at the amounts, they're really quite a bit less when you compare vegetation to the animals.
And part of the thing with the animals, if I can interrupt for just a second, Manny, is the fact that they have to hose them down continually because they're standing in manure all day. So they have manure and pee, and they're in it all day long, and they have to hose them down. So those lagoons become even more filled with the same, growing bacteria that are now going into the ground, into your food.
So, yeah, have you looked at any of the effect that this has on the cropland and soil erosion, Simon?
Well, yes and no. I have not investigated it in a scientific manner, but one thing is very clear. If we don't change something, we're going to see another dust bowl. You cannot possibly farm the same crops on the same acreage, decade after decade. Crop rotation was designed to allow the land to recover, and the same goes with animals. I mean, why not have a third of your land as pasture? Put your animals there. Why have them all in one place?
Well, and Simon, you know what the net result is? About 90% of U.S. cropland is losing soil at 13 times above the sustainable rate. So every year, we are losing 13 times as much soil as we save. So, Ashley, you had an observation about all that.
When I was recently reading about the, I think it was the Jefferson Farmer County in Iowa, I was reading, no, I'm sorry, it's about the Gerson, the gentleman who is currently suing the Monsanto with alfalfa, because he, this is one of his big fights right now, is about how the soil is being lost. And he's saying farmers for 13 years now have been doing this GMO, BT, corn, and soy, because 13 years ago, Monsanto went in with their lovely salespeople and their fancy clothes, and I'm telling you his words, and how great they were, and they promoted the heck out of how easy it is for farmers to use their product. Spray the glyphosate on the ground. You have to use less. It's a great product. What they didn't say is once it's been sprayed on the ground, it destroys that soil. No testing was ever done, continues to not be done. The farmers are all apologizing because they're all saying they believed Monsanto and these biotech companies. And they are all gathering together because they know the soil is being eroded and destroyed. And who doesn't know that farms, I think his funniest statement was when this man said, you know, if you don't know that you have to rotate your crops and you don't have not rotated your crops to handle our alfalfa, then you know what? You need to do something else with your living. And that is what it's coming down to right now. They all started with this lie 13 years ago, sold to them by these biotech companies, and now they're finding it doesn't work. So instead of continuing the same bad process, change has to happen.
Okay. Well, let me throw another stat in to illustrate Ashley's point. Is the soil loss is really the most severe in the richest farming areas, Nebraska, Iowa, et cetera. And, for example, Iowa loses topsoil at a rate of 30 times the amount of new soil formed. In other words, where they've rotated a crop and done everything necessary to preserve the soil. Iowa's lost one half of its topsoil in the last 150 years of farming. It's soil that took thousands of years to form. At the present rate that we're going, Iowa will be a barren state in the next 20 to 30 years. And that's something that people aren't considering. They're so busy raping the land for today's profits and Wall Street, they're not looking at the consequences of what's going to happen 20, 30 years down the line.
It's already happening. We're seeing the door's open. We see it.
No, the door's open. What I'm saying is that door is going to close before 2050. And now I understand what all these climate change scientists and all these people are talking about, that it's the combined efforts of the mega corporations that are causing the weather change. And it is just not the weather change. It's what the weather change does to our soil. And, Simon, you've had a terrible year of the BP disaster, the incredible rains and weather shifts in Mississippi, and you must look around and wonder what that's doing to the soil and the land in your area.
Well, I know that it's not doing anything good. If I was a farmer, I would be very, very, very concerned. You know, it suddenly a lifestyle that maybe you know, many generations old is going to go away. I do see another Dust Bowl. I genuinely do. And you know, I don't want to be the preacher of doom and gloom, because I think human beings are actually quite smart. Yeah, we're able to fix problems. But until someone actually sits up and takes notice, we're just going to watch this gradual slide into Armageddon.
And, you know, I think, Simon, that the key of what you're saying, too, is it's not that we are out there saying, you know, let's bring fear to people. It is trying to educate not only ourselves but everybody along with us, because the more you become educated in this and understanding what's happening and how it all ties into the primal thing, which is food. Food is the most primal need of human beings. So if we take care of the soil, We take care of Acid Rain. We take care of the food. And it all begins, you know, it begins with the seed of whatever it is you're feeding. And you can't feed them something they can't break down or fix it by saying, you know what, I'm going to take that seed and I'm going to alter it. I'll keep altering it because, damn it, I want to own it. And not only do I want to own it, I'm going to change it so that I can own it. And, oh, well, at least I know it works for me.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm getting increasingly grumpy with the hits that you two and I are taking from Big Food and Big Pharma. I'm absolutely fed up with it. I know that their objective is to make us go away. Well, we aren't going away. And I'd like to say this. If you have absolutely nothing to hide, invite us for a visit. In fact, come on the air with us. You know, Manny, Ashley, and I, we're all grown-ups. If you can prove that we are wrong, we will be the first to admit it. Yeah, we'll say, oh, Monsanto's the greatest company in the world. CAFO's the way to go. But quite honestly, right now, I'm just pissed.
Simon, so am I. I went from this education where I highly believed in science and everything in the future has to go to science. And what I subsequently keep learning is, you know, human beings have not changed overall. We've evolved, but we've not changed so much that, you know, we need enzymes, we need supplements, we need organic. That's what our body uses. Animals need their organic. And they're supplements, and they need sunlight. You can't put them in a dark building that you're so ashamed of. I mean, these companies are so ashamed to let anybody see that they put them all in dark, closed-in cement buildings. I mean, I would say to anybody to please go to MapQuest, pick out areas on Iowa and places that have where you're used to seeing cattle roaming for their health. The cattle health, our health. And guess what? There is brick building after brick building of hidden, hidden, hidden. And not only are they ashamed of the animals and what they're doing and the horrible manner in which they are feeding them and the lagoons, but they're also afraid to even put GMO on the packages. If you're so proud of what you're doing, hey, put biotech, I made this, man-made food. Put it on the package. You know what I'm saying? And put the side effects on that package.
Well, it's a subject that I know that we've broached before. Food labeling.
Yeah.
You're right. If they're so proud of it, real GMO beef.
Yeah, 100% GMO. I made this animal sick just for you. You know what I'm saying, Simon?
Well, you don't have to even go that far. Just put GMO on the package because surveys show that Americans don't want GMO, and that 90% of them will not buy it. So, I mean, doesn't that send the industry a message? No. They ignore it because they don't care what any of us feel.
They come down the same road and go, we're going to make an Enviro Pig. And, oh, Simon, this is one that, let me finish one thing before I go to this, because this is one that, oh, this one cannot escape us today, Simon. I found it 5 minutes before the show and went, are you kidding? Okay, so I was going to say one of the main things that people want to do with organic is, again, the meat is high in omega-3 and low in herbs. Or high, the meat, grass-fed meat is high in omega-3, which is very healthy for people. But healthy meat also means lower in calories. So grass-fed compared to your grain-fed, the grain-fed has 9 calories per gram of fat. Your grass-fed has 7 calories protein carbos. The greater the fat content, the greater the number of the calories. So an example is if you have a 6-ounce steak from a grass-finished steer, you can have 100 fewer calories per 6-ounce steak from a grain-fed steer. So if you typically eat beef, let's say 66.5 pounds a year, and you switch to a lean grass-fed beef, you will save 17,733 calories a year without requiring willpower, without anything other than changing your eating habit to organic.
And this is one of the reasons why we say repeatedly in our book that this leads to one of the weight gain problems that the Americans are experiencing.
And changing your Enviro pig is not going to alter the fact that you're still going to have this high fat pig that is a sick pig. It's still going to remain the same. It'll just alter its phosphorus, so the poo has changed, you know.
And Simon, have you had an opportunity to taste the difference between organic beef and basically the factory farm beef? Because I know it's difficult for you to find it in your locale.
I haven't recently, but yes, I understand exactly. In fact, beef isn't the example I would choose. Eggs, you know,
who doesn't
like an egg? I like mine sunny side up. Now the eggs you get in the store, They're kind of washed out color and the yolk. They tend to be small, even though the package says extra large. But I mean,
it's not a 6-inch egg, right?
But I mean, maybe it's just that I'm getting older and. I remember the way it was, but an egg was an egg. I mean, bright yellow yolk, it had great flavor, and the chickens just roamed around the farmyard. No, there's a huge difference in flavor, and not only flavor but nutrition. I think that's the key here. Not only does it taste better, it's better for you.
And the frightening thing for me was, and I do say frightening, was when the Rite Aid County happened and we examined further what was happening with the GMO feed that was going into the hens and how the DNA transfer of salmonella was actually occurring within the eggs. So this isn't something you can just wash off. And maybe, the first 20 batches are okay, but what if you're the lucky one that gets that salmonella DNA-changed egg based on feed again, the big fat lie. You know, Simon?
And in fact, the hot rumor, I haven't been able to confirm it, but they are changing their name. They're going from right eggs to wrong eggs.
I love you, Simon. You're so funny.
and I want to come back to something that gets lost in this, because I hear this all the time from people. It's that big a deal, et cetera. And putting aside the big deal, one of the things that bothers me is the taste. Ashley buys these organic eggs, and she basically likes to boil eggs. So a lot of times I have a cold-boiled egg in a salad or I'll have it with a lunch, and I went years without eating eggs. For one thing, they gave me, frankly, too much gas, and anyone who has problems digesting eggs will tell you that it has a sulfur component when you do. The organic eggs don't affect you that way. That's the amazing thing, and they taste so much better. I mean, just the difference in taste alone is enough to make you want to switch.
Plus the fact that they're feeding these hens soy, you can automatically reduce your soy consumption. Again, it's only 75 grams a day, and it's so toxic, soy, that you have to break it up in the course of the day. It's one more thing of soy that's affecting the thyroid and the metabolism and the weight. So there's a whole thing that goes with a simple thing of an egg. Change the feed. You know, Simon?
Yeah.
Right. I'm with you. I mean, there is nothing better than, you know, fresh, organic anything. It doesn't matter if it's animals or vegetables, dairy products. They all taste better.
Yeah, you know, basically Americans who lived 100 years ago and grew their own food were eating better quality food than Americans are now. And not only is it better quality food, their dinners tasted better. So every time you see these movies and you see all these people in these old movies eating this food, you know, there was a tendency to almost feel sorry for them because they didn't have the modern advances. Now I'm starting to feel sorry for all of us because we're not getting to eat what people ate, you know, this, you know, 100 years ago or even 50, 70 years ago.
Although we found the sites on the Internet, I don't know if you published them or not, Simon, with the fact that there's places you can go within the Internet, and they will actually ship the food to you. So you can get organic food if you can't get it within your region, or they will tell you where there is organic stores that you can purchase the food within your neighborhood, which is really a major key to me.
Right. And actually, that's a great segue. Time for a shameless commercial break. You've mentioned your books several times. Where can people find them?
Well, I think our listeners know they can go to our own website, howtoeliminatepain.com. And there we not only have all four of our books for sale, and the most recent is It's Not Your Fault, which contains almost all this information about why these cause weight gain, but we have over 50 published articles in there that help explain all of this. And, of course, you can go to Blogger News and Simon's articles and hit the icon and go directly to our books. And you can also read a great many of our blogs, including almost everything we said today we published yesterday in regards to EnviroPigs. And the other things are available. And we appreciate you publishing these, and I hope they help people. But and for those who have questions, email us a question at our website, and we'll be happy to respond to anything that you'd like to know. And that includes the industry, because it's clear to us now the industry have assigned somebody to us to monitor your emails and blogs and everything else, which I find, frankly, a compliment, because if we're bothering them enough where they have to assign somebody to us, that means that what we're saying must be true, and they're worried about it.
Oh, it was up, that comment on the last one, Simon. I swear it was up within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're on their Facebook or we're tweeted somewhere.
Well, you know, people who listen or basically very computer literate know that when Simon publishes an article and within the first 50 reads, the industry's put up some objection to what we say, obviously they know what we're doing. So if you doubt what we're saying, believe me, the industry doesn't, because they know it's true and they're already finding a strategy to fight us. So
can I, Simon, I have to tell you one second. This is going to be, I've saved this for the end so that people can think about this. We've gone from EnviroPig to human genes are put into pig sperm. Do you know about this? Okay, it's a new method.
No, but I'm sure I'm about to.
Okay,
whether you want to or not.
Now, this has been going on since a big brag of biotech since 2002. A new method for putting genes into an animal species by gene therapy on sperm that has been tested in pigs. The genetically modified animals are created simply by washing the sperm, swishing it in a centrifuge with an additional gene, and using the altered sperm for artificial insemination, the Italian researcher brags. Okay, so at this university in Milan, they're saying, see, this, we can create this. It's really easy. It's very simple, a simple technique. And when you hear the bottom line list, I'll tell you in a minute. The sperm is based technique is relatively cheap, 14 to 115 times more effective in planting genes in pigs than the direct injection of DNA, which is the most common way of making genetically engineered animals. So they're looking for a cheaper way right now. So they're taking human sperm and placing it into the pig.
It's only a question before we have enviro humans.
Oh, this is disgusting. Wait till you hear this, Simon. 93 piglets were born after the research tinkering with the pig sperm, and 57% of them contained the human gene, suggesting the sperm soaked into up from the solution. Now, the reason they're doing this is that they're trying to grow human organs in pigs.
I always thought that that would be classed as bestiality.
I'm speechless.
I thought that was forbidden, personally, in the so-called process of controlling, making human genomes. And so what we have is, again, people who are really not looking at the morality of the science they create and are just wowing in the magical things they can do instead of considering whether the things they do affect society as a whole. And basically, isn't this what we've all called in our society a mad scientist?
I mean, reading this, it was very frightening to me. And when we were researching again on the EnviroPig, coming across this, I again was saying, oh my God, biotech's going to do something that they'll have organs that they will be able to put into humans. How are they doing this? And I couldn't find the research, and there it was. So they're taking the human sperm, putting it into the pig, and trying to grow organs so that then they can use this. You won't have immunological problems, and they can transplant it. How about this? How about going back to eating organic, taking enzymes, resolving the problem of allergies and intolerances, create a diet that's specific for you, and in the end, you won't be sick, and you won't need those transplants. Now, I've had a bad kidney. In my 20s, my kidney was destroyed. But guess what? I still have my kidneys because I did juicing. I did this elimination diet back in my 20s. I created my own diet specific for my own needs. And it wasn't until I started eating GMO unbeknownst to me that I became ill again. And the same with Manny. I mean, I think that to create – this is mind-boggling to me, Simon.
Well, what bothers me is that – this whole Italian experiment brings up very large questions of ethics and morality, and I'm not a Bible thumper, but I really do think that there are some morality issues here, and there are most definitely some huge ethical issues.
Huge.
Absolutely huge. And the fact that this article is from 2002, who knows what the Italians have done since then? Fact they're bragging that 57% of these piglets contain human genes. Woo-woo.
Oh, man. But there again, those Italians.
But Simon, if that's going on there, who's to say where else it's happening and where else it's going on?
Well, wait a minute. I was raised a Catholic, and I would like to know why the Pope is condemning Andrew Cuomo for living with his girlfriend and not being concerned about human genome testing in Italy, where human cells are being injected into pigs. I mean, it's like fiddling while Rome burns around him. I don't understand the Catholic Church's position at all, which is one of the reasons why I haven't been there in a lot of years, is no one can quite understand what they're doing anymore.
Yes, that is the subject of not just a book, but a whole series of volumes.
Oh, believe me, after 12 years in Catholic schools, I could write a few myself.
I don't know, Simon. This one really left me. The EnviroPig really upset me because of the gene transfer and the known DNA gene transfer that occur from one animal and one species to another, as in to humans, let alone you're damaging the animal. I just, 8,000 years of having pigs and we're going to mess with them?
Well,
and like you said, bestiality. How is that any different? It's artificially inseminating a pig with human genes. A human sperm.
Well, maybe that's how we got, as I said, minotaurs in the first place. I mean, people wondered what happened and where they came from. Maybe we had the ancient astronauts experimenting in the same way that we are. Who knows what the ultimate answer is? But what we do know is that this is not a road that's productive for human beings. And if anyone challenges that, I'm just absolutely shocked. How can any rational person consider that experimenting with human genomes in animals doesn't come with massive consequences to mankind is lying, greedy, and dangerous to our society, which is the definition of people, scientists, who work in this industry. They don't...
Actually, I think that was the Webster's definition for Monsanto.
Yeah, and the point is, with all this, Simon, it's just getting back to grassroots. I mean, I think it's just getting back to, you know, we can try to... Advancement doesn't mean advancing by doing these bizarre Frankenstein experiments or creating man pigs, but to actually go back to the basics. I mean,
well, yeah, maybe every American needs a man pig for the man cave.
Oh, I mean, just... There's enough man pigs out there. What can
only
I say?
Only you could come up with that.
Yeah, we could do it. We can that one, right, Simon?
I can do it. I can do stand up on that one. Or sit down, as the case may be. But yeah, but this is, you know, it sounds like we're dragging this into some bizarre direction, but so did Rod Serling and every great sci-fi writer in American history. So it's not like we're advancing views that are unique. Every time I turn on a sci-fi film in my youth, from Star Trek up and down the line, they're all theorizing this is going to happen one day in society. And guess what? It's happening in our time, something none of us ever thought would happen.
And what gets me is how the news just, they sort of, why isn't this like big, bold, and constant newspapers? I would want to read this constantly. I think people should be aware of this, don't you, Simon?
Ooh, I think it's all about money.
Yeah.
If you've got money, you can promote or suppress.
Right, and that's exactly what's happening in this country.
And the false advertising that people have, and I had. I mean, again, I was pro-biotech. Woo, boy, have I changed. They've totally...
Oh. Are you talking about that delightful advert for the corn sugar industry? Sugar
one of the
is,
many. And then
sugar
were my
is just
drug companies.
Sugar.
Drug companies are my favorite, you know, with those side effects.
You know, I comment.
Oh, yeah.
I like to quote World Watch all the time who refers to Monsanto is the foremost corporate criminal in the world. You can understand now why so many of these groups labeled that. It's not because they're raging liberals or something. It's because the actions of these countries are dangerous and endangering our society, and people need to stand up and look at this far more closely than they are.
Because it's about health, and it's about survival of future generations, being healthy. It's about health.
No, but health and survival for human beings are synonymous.
Right, and our primal need of food.
Right.
Is there any truth in the rumor that Monsanto are changing their warning labels for seeds sold in India? You know, occasional side effects are suicide.
Oh, my God. The
yeah.
suicide rate is just horrible. It was 182,000 suicides because of Monsanto's fancy lie, you know, and the people, farmers have lost their land, and, you know, and Canada's having a problem right now. Their corporations are, the Canadian union up there is complaining because corporations are going up and doing the same thing and taking over their land.
Yeah, what they're doing is they're creating indentured servitudes by making loans that can't be repaid, which then causes the farmer to become literally a serf, which is the words, by the way, of Dr. Thicke, the Iowa farmer you interviewed, that in essence corporate America is turning Americans into serfs. And
yep.
On that note, I noticed you must have someone barking in your ear that we're over time.
Oh, that barking, that's not the word.
Well, we should say goodbye to everybody and tune in next week because we're not done with this subject.
No, we don't know what we're going to pull out next week. And thank you, Simon. Thank you to the listeners.
We still have a whole list of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So there's plenty to talk about. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett, Manny Barling, and Ashley Brooks wishing everyone a very happy and a very safe weekend. And we will be back again next week. Till next time, goodbye.